Talk to Tea, we welcome the candid and witty Michelle Fischler. Michelle grew up the child of a Holocaust survivor in South Africa, and while attending a convent for school, her relationship with her body was sculpted by the juxtaposition of living among showgirls in Sun City. Fascinated by the values around sex and sexuality in people's homes while growing up, and how the sexual experiences throughout our lives impact us today, Michelle became a certified sex therapist. Michelle's recently launched the podcast Get Some, in which she and her incredible guests delve into all different corners of the sex and sexuality spectrum, from online dating to non-monogamy to sexual surrogacy. Let's dive into this awesome conversation. Well, Michelle, welcome to Talk to Tea. I'm so excited to have you join us today.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to talk today about something very incredible that you have just launched, which is your podcast.
I know. How exciting.
Want to share the title of your podcast?
Yeah, sure. So the podcast is called Get Some. It's a podcast where I explore different ways of expressing yourself sexually, but also different ways that maybe people in different parts of the world are impacted by values in terms of how it transfers through and how they express themselves sexually and in relationships. And I've had an interest working in the area of culture, because I see so many people in my practice that talk about their experiences of growing up and learning about parts that really impacted them, such as religion, values in growing up in their family, friends, experiences that they've had growing up that have hugely impacted who they are as sexual beings, as adults. So I have a curiosity about that. And I also just have always wanted to be able to allow people to maybe understand themselves a bit better when it comes to sex, because I also work with a lot of shame.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for speaking. You brought up a lot of really interesting points that I'm like, okay, let's dive right into those, but I'll contain myself.
You want to dive into the shame, don't you?
Yes, I do. Well, I was going to say in a very cheeky and it's kind of, yeah, you know, it's cheeky and sad. It's that, mm-hmm, yeah, it's almost as though sex and shame go hand in hand. And wouldn't it be lovely if we could just drop that second word and just have sex stand alone as the brilliant, wonderful, spiritual, magical experience that it is?
Yeah, it's, shame is so powerful. It's really hard, I think, for anybody in this day and age to have avoided it. Even when I talk with people who appear to have had a very healthy relationship with sex, that whether it's what they've heard, you know, in the media or through friends, somehow it sneaks its way in there.
Yeah, there's the overt and then the covert, I like to say.
Yeah.
And it can be shocking and occur midway or in conversation or during sex or...
Yeah, and I talk about that in my podcast. Just because I'm a sex therapist doesn't mean that I have no shame around, yeah, this, right? Like, even though I'm very much aware of it and I let it take up very little space, that it's still there. And I had to go on my journey to face it head on. And a part of me also wants to be able to support other people in doing that as well. Because it can really honestly be life-changing in that it frees you up to just be yourself.
It's that experience. And please, you know, you're definitely the expert in this category for sure, or this topic. And my experience is that shame is, it's such a mind twister. It's like it's a block to the true essence of who you are, like a pretty heavy block. It can be at times.
Oh yeah, because our worst fear is that whatever that shame is, that we realize it's true. And it just prevents us, we kind of a lot of us will stay hidden behind it because in order to test it out and to take the risk of maybe asking for what it is that you want or talking about something that's happened to you growing up, it feels scary to know if somebody's going to be able to respond to you in the way that you need them to, in a supportive and accepting way. And then I think once people understand that you can step out of it, it doesn't just go away. Like, it's always going to be in its little compartment, but the power that it has over you can be turned down significantly.
I'm curious about this. What's the first step in beginning that journey?
I usually ask that question, actually, when people come in to see me. I'll always say, why now? Right? This is something that it sounds like you've struggled with for a really long time. What's coming up right now that is giving you the strength to actually try to figure it out? And oftentimes there's been like a significant event, like separation, somebody's been caught in an affair. Maybe people are in a relationship that they feel so safe and comfortable in, yet they can't seem to express themselves sexually with their partner and they don't understand why. And so maybe their partner has said, like, I need you to work things out. Like, I feel like we're missing a really significant part of our intimate connection without it. I feel like I'm hurting you, or you seem scared when I'm trying to have sex with you, but I'm wanting to have sex with you because I love you. Like, you look at me as though I'm not me. Mm-hmm. Other times people get to a point in their life where they've been living a certain way. And then maybe it's also women who start to really feel more comfortable mm-hmm. in themselves, in their bodies. And like, after maybe they've had kids, there is something mm-hmm. that can happen, in particular for the women that are coming into my practice, where they're like, I am feeling an overwhelming amount of desire and I want to be able to explore this, but I feel completely clueless. Like, I don't know how to have these experiences in a really safe and pleasurable way. You know, sometimes people also come in because they're starting to realize that maybe they don't see themselves as heterosexual. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a part of them that feels that way, but then maybe there's another part of them that is noticing that they're attracted to somebody of the same sex, or maybe they're finding themselves attracted to a trans person or whatever, or maybe they are thinking that they don't feel comfortable in the body that they were mm-hmm. born with, and they want to sort of shift with that, but their partner is struggling with it mm-hmm. and trying to support them through that. Sometimes somebody dies, mm-hmm. grief. Sometimes it was an illness that they recovered from and they want to live. They want to be alive. They want to like live the rest of their life. And part of that is being able to explore their sexual identity. And
that is one of the pivot points in my life, was after battling cancer. Mm. There was like this unleashing, if you will, permission where previously none had been given, granted by myself, to just unleash that part of me, and to a determination in the ensuing weeks after I became healthy again to live authentically and true to me. Mm-hmm. So I totally resonate with what you just said.
And for you, did it feel risky? Was it an easier transition given that you'd already experienced like how scary cancer can be, I imagine? And so when you have experienced something like that, things like sex, expressing yourself, maybe it doesn't feel totally as scary anymore.
You summed it perfectly. It was the experience of where the joy at being able to live another day and to live probably to a ripe old age, God willing, right? It superseded the level of shame. So it was as though that permission and that zest for life completely diminished any shame I had.
And I think maybe you also care less about what other people think.
Totally.
Right. I don't know about you. I certainly have felt that way as I've matured. Mm-hmm. It used to be, oh my God, like, what are people going to think? Now I'm like, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Right. Like, am I happy? Am I living my best life? Am I hurting anybody? Harming anybody? Is anyone going to die? Like, those are.
Yeah, those are big criteria.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it comes down to. And if you think about it, we fear a lack of belonging. We fear our mortality. We fear death when it's a very natural part. And so, yeah, absolutely. I think when you go through a situation like that, or when you, as you say, wizen, mm-hmm. as you age.
Yeah.
That you begin to drop it. And if you think about, you know, at the end of the day, when we're taking our last breath, we go alone. And so all of those people that stood in judgment, or we feared, or all of it, they're not actually going to support us in that journey to our last breath. I mean, they may stand beside us, but
sure,
we're going to be the ones that have to walk it with all of the, and hopefully no regrets, but you know, with all of the things left undone that we left undone because of that drive for belonging, et cetera.
And that belonging piece has been really fascinating in the work that I do, because just because you maybe choose that you want to be or live your life in a certain way and identify with a certain culture or a certain sexuality or whatever it is, if you leave it up to everybody else, you may never exactly fit in any category. When it comes to sex, it's so fluid and changes all the time. And so even when people say, come out, they find that they come out. And then when they're within, say, that community, there's also a sense of not belonging because maybe you're not gay enough or lesbian enough or trans enough or feminine enough or masculine enough. You will never be enough if you leave it in other people's hands. And so a lot of the work is really coming to a place where, like, what is your category? You don't have to fit anywhere. And if you hear these things from other people, that's what their category, that's how they see themselves. It's just somebody's opinion, somebody's judgment.
Totally. I love that you said that, because that exactly is the journey. I certainly had that journey when I came out, and it was so funny. I realized how gay I was inside, but how hetero I was really in my actions.
Yes.
So hilariously, you know, juxtaposed, which you and I both love that play. Mm-hmm. It's an area of fascination. I think I might speak for both of us there on that. Mm-hmm. And recognizing that actually sliding into the gay community, there were labels and there was black and white, and you were either like butch or femme or, and I know now,
lipstick dyke or like,
right? Like some of those terms, thank God, are being retired.
Yeah.
And being seen as our own, you know, exclusion.
Well, if I want to call myself a lipstick dyke, or if I want to call myself a butch, right. I can call myself whatever I want. But like, don't you
label me
assume that, right? 100%.
Yeah. Or make assumptions, right? It's like, I think in the beginning, you know, I looked very feminine. So then there was an assumption by maybe more butch lesbians that I was a good match for them, when I was this raging butch underneath this very feminine outlook. And it's hilarious because I went through this whole identity swing, and I don't want to make this podcast about me, but it's like right in line with what you're speaking. And it actually, if we bring it back to sex, it screwed with my sex life. And because it was a mind trip. I was searching for how do my insides match my outsides? How do I line that up? And also,
as soon as you start
my
lining
attraction zone, right? Like, who am I attracted to within the lesbian community?
Yeah,
became very complex.
Yeah, because as soon as you start trying to line things up and make sense of your sex life in particular, you have already left the journey.
Right.
And you are like in your head. And if you are in a situation where you think you should be either more feminine or masculine and how you're presenting yourself during sex, but it's not quite resonating with what actually feels good for you, like you're out. Like you
100%.
It's all about just being able to embrace. It's a little bit of this and it's a little bit of that. And like, that's all I can. That's really what you see is what you get.
Yes.
And if that person is struggling with how you are expressing yourself, that is not your problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that is something that maybe they need to work through. Or maybe it is that you're not the right fit for them.
Yeah.
Right? It's not personal. It's not a deficit within you.
Yeah.
It's just part of their figuring out their who they are.
You just brought up another good point I was thinking about, and I know this is an area of fascination for you, and that's like we have the impact of your environment, the LGBT community, it's, you know, predisposed to which box do you fit in.
Yeah.
Growing up, we're dropping those things. But there's also cultural impact on sex and our sex life. Can you speak to us a little bit about that? I know that this is an area for you that you're delving or have delved into and done a lot of work in.
Yeah. And culture can be as small as like your family and as big as the country that you live in. It's based on values. So for example, if you grow up in a culture where there are certain tasks, responsibilities that are for women only and men only, like in a lot of different cultures, let's say a cis man isn't emotional, let's say, or they don't have experience with expressing their emotions, but they are entitled to pleasurable sex. Whereas for a woman who's in, you know, a similar culture, let's say the same one, for her, the responsibility is to be the emotional one, but not to be focused on her pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Her focus is on her partner's pleasure, her husband's pleasure, norms of what expectations of and religion.
Mm-hmm.
So religion is another one.
Mm-hmm.
Where again, it is very much either focused on making babies, keeping your husband happy sexually. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, there might be other cultures that are more open to women honing in on their desires and their pleasure, or like, just it's all about belief systems. Like, so a lot of people or mm-hmm. women are told don't have sex before marriage, right? So there are these ideas that if you are sexual and if you like sex, there's something wrong with you, or you're a slut, or you're like one of the many different, like one of the many different words that you get called, right? Dirty.
Yeah. When in fact, it's actually an experience of being quite evolved in order to actually have great and wonderful sex.
Yeah. To be able to hone into that part of yourself without being like, what's the word? Like brainwashed by what you're hearing from family or the media, where you're actually really, you find out that your body can give you such amazing pleasure and you go with it. It's a skill. Like, you've figured out the one thing that your body can do to make you feel so good that you could almost lose consciousness.
But
a lot of people, and I would say most particularly people who have vulvas, like, have a fear of touching themselves.
Yeah.
Because it's wrong. I mean, also young boys, same thing. You masturbate, you're going to grow hair on your hands, or like, yeah. I don't know. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm sure we could like name off so many different stories, right?
Yeah.
It's like, who the hell made this really bad?
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, when you try to understand the whys behind it, it all starts to make sense, right? I'm sure, you know, patriarchy pops up there. One of the many ways that culture and society can impact us.
Yeah. And you've had some really fascinating, beautiful humans featured as your guests on your podcast. Mm. So it's a great invitation for people to listen up and to actually experience for the time you have them in your studio, you know, to listen to their stories and immerse themselves and to remember, like, you know, we're listening from North American soil in an environment that, you know, we're pretty clear on what our limitations are on this subject.
Yeah.
The range of those, you know, culturally melting pot that is Canada, et cetera, et cetera. However, you know, listening potentially from, like, for a second, imagining yourself in Mexico or some of the other areas that your guests travel or hail from.
Yeah.
It's yet a whole other ball game, a whole other set of constraints that's tricky to put our mind around, right?
A whole lot of sets of constraints that, even though it's happening there, it's still happening here.
Yeah.
And so still relatable, even though I'm speaking to people from a different culture, everything is relatable. Like, when you're speaking to the people in Mexico, the issues around getting an abortion and it being illegal, right? The prevalence of gender violence and incest, lack of sex education, right? I think all of us can relate to that. I know certainly in my practice, all of those things come up eventually, right? Like, we might not start talking about those things. Although when people come and see me, my practice is very much honed in to working with people that are having some struggle with sexual concerns. But I know I always start to ask about past experiences, the values you were raised with growing up.
Yeah.
Because those and any traumatic experiences, even positive sexual experiences, have a huge impact in helping us understand what's getting in our way. They provide us clues, right? Sometimes people come in and they haven't made the connection. Why am I feeling so much? Why am I feeling pain during sex? Why do I not have desire? What else? Oh my gosh, the list could go on and on. And then you float back a little bit and you start to ask some questions about belief systems and experiences. And then it's just like, oh my God, I never made that connection. And it's like, as soon as you make the connection, it's power. It's power. You start to take some of your power back, right? And we kind of look at it like that. How do you reclaim that part of yourself, right? Rather than hiding behind it.
Yeah, that notion, that access to power is, I know recently there's been quite the explosion in terms of women's studies, more funding, et cetera, et cetera. Research on the power of orgasm and what it actually, it was funny, you and I are talking off air even about Napoleon Hill back in the day, writing Think and Grow Rich, a quote right out of a chapter which I'm like pretty sure I must have slept through because I do not remember this in this book. The mystery of sex transmutation, the energy of the libido is often channeled. Well, sorry, I said orgasm, but libido often channeled by successful people to focus on achieving specific goals, whether they be creative, political, entrepreneurial. Like, I think there's maybe it's not necessarily the flip side of this conversation, but the opportunity in addressing those past beliefs or cultural impacts, et cetera, is the access to this power that you speak of and that incredibly sacred, sacred power. Can you speak to us a little bit about that?
I think just referring back to the whole orgasm piece, like there are such amazing benefits from that in that, well, number one, it feels really good.
Yeah.
Number two, it helps with stress. It helps with sleep. The other thing is it helps you gain control over what you do like and what you don't like. So when you go into a sexual situation, if you're not in touch with that part of yourself, you only really know what you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have the words. You have no idea how to be able to tell somebody what you do like. And I think probably that relationship with people who really can connect with that part of their body or the part of their life, that their sex life or their sexual desire. And then also to feel confident enough to like put that out into the ether with another person, not fully knowing, hopefully you've had good conversations about it before, if they're going to be okay with it, it's risky.
Yeah.
And in order for many successful people to become successful, you have to take risk. You lean into it.
Oh,
right?
I love that parallel. Yes.
It's very, I know it's just in, we're talking about sex here, but often how people are in their sex life can be quite similar to how they relate in other situations outside of their sex life.
Oh, that's so brilliant.
Yeah, so brilliant. Which is really reassuring for people because sometimes people are like, oh, I'm feeling so anxious. Like when I'm getting into a sexual situation, I'm so anxious. I get into my head. I, you know, can't like get in touch with like what's happening in my body. But if you actually look at just anxiety, and you look at other parts of their life and how it might come out at work or how it might come out in friendships, that it's not specific to sex.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it is, but often it can be quite generalized, which is helpful for people because sometimes people just think that they're broken in their sex life.
Yeah. And we make up that term broken by measuring ourselves against other people rather than just simply looking at unpacking some of what you've brought in the podcast. It's like, you know, beliefs and events and how did I get here? And actually, it reminds me, as you know, I work with a lot of entrepreneurs and I work a lot with like families in business together, et cetera, et cetera. And I mean, talk about cultural constraint there, experiencing your partner in business with you. And then suddenly you're, you know, now you're having, or you're hoping you might have sex, or you're bringing the professional now into the personal, and maybe there's an upset during the day and moving past that in order to, got any advice for those folks?
Yeah. This is a lot of what I'm going to say now is based on a lot of Esther Perel's work. Sex requires you to step out of those spaces, unless in some ways you've eroticized them. I don't know. Maybe you have. And I'm not saying that some people it's a non-issue, right? But I would say in order for you to really be in that moment with your partner, who's also your who's also your business partner, who's also the parent of your kids, who also you know, goes to the washroom with the door open, close the door, but
have there be some mystery.
You need to be able to find ways to step out, like where you can see each other in a very different way, where there's space. You can look at them like you know, like you would when you go to a concert or you see a public speaker and you see them on stage, right? You want to be able to look at your partner in that way too, in right, where you can then, you know, almost like pull back and notice how attractive they are, how smart they are, kind they are, how sexy they are. But as people, you would think that as people become closer and have been together longer, you would think that their sex life would just be off the chart. So good, you're so comfortable, all of these things. But actually the opposite happens. In that, I mean, not for everybody, but when you first get together with somebody in a relationship, there's lots of mystery and newness. It's very, very exciting, right? You start to learn about their body and their likes and dislikes. However, when your lives become a little bit more intertwined, couples will notice that their sex life kind of goes down a bit. It's maybe not as exciting. Maybe it's getting to the point of being very predictable, boring, scratching an itch, not a whole lot of quality. And it's because once your lives become so intertwined, doing those more, sexy, adventurous kinds of sexual things becomes more risky. There's more to lose if you bring it up to your partner and they're just like, what the fuck? Like, are you,
where does that come from?
What the heck? Right.
Yeah.
So you would tend to like not want to put yourself in a situation where your feelings might get hurt because like that person really matters to you. And it's not to say that things can't get worked on, right? But it takes a lot of communication.
Yeah.
Talking about what's on the table, what's off the table, what do we do if I ask for something and it's not your thing? How are you going to be able to say that to me in a way that like feels safe and I feel held and I don't feel embarrassed?
I think you said the magic word, which is communication. It's so interesting to me. I think I've shared with you in the past about my greatest surprise was exploring different communities such as polyamory and open communities and all of that, and discovering the power of their incredible communication skills.
Some, yes.
Not all kinds. Totally gotcha.
When they don't, they end up in my office.
Exactly.
But so do non-polyamorous people, right?
Absolutely.
And yeah, the communication is... oh, that it's beautiful to see, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And it's exactly what you're speaking to in terms of like really become amazing at communicating with each other, which is risky and scary.
Sure.
It's courageous. It's, you know, entering into those difficult conversations and learning how to have conflict in a super healthy way.
Yeah.
Essentially. And it really is the key. Yeah. In terms of like, as you said, like keeping the spark or creating sparks in your sex life when you play multiple roles with your partner.
Yeah. Like I've had people come into my office and it's like, they're almost cured, but just helping them with the communication, not even the sexual stuff, right? Talking about sex. And not the doing, that can just be enough. As soon as it opens up the door and as soon as they realize they can have conversations in a really safe way around this, it like opens up a whole bunch of possibilities. with sexual adventures, or I don't know, sometimes it is being able to say to somebody, like, I'm not feeling good about our sex life right now. Mm-hmm. People feel so afraid to do that. But then once they do it and the whole world didn't fall apart, mm-hmm. and matter of fact, their partner's just like, oh my God, like, I wish you would have told me this before. Mm-hmm. Holy moly, it is magical.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, actually. It's like, it often will bring tears to my eyes when I'm working and I'm watching them talk with each other. And I'm just like, oh my God, I love my job. It's so good.
Yeah. It's like they cross a bridge toward each other that just hadn't been there. And the deep space between them was, one might think, just not passable. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. And speaking of safe spaces, you know, if mm-hmm. we come back to the podcast,
you have an
interesting element of the podcast in that mm-hmm. people can actually write in questions.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be like really super confronting if they're like, you know, getting ready to step up and address their sex life, which is
totally,
you're accepting questions and you answer those. It's called Confession Booth. Is that what you're calling
Yeah,
it?
My confession booth.
So brilliant. I love that.
Yeah. It I wanted to have an aspect of this on the show because I benefited from it growing up, listening to Sue Johansson on the Talking Sex with Sue show or like her radio show, and people would call in and I would, every Sunday night, because it was a Sunday night sex show, I would either be in my car, I would always be available, and I'd hear the questions and I would just hear Sue answer in these really matter of fact ways. And she would never start laughing and she would kind of give the facts and it was validating. And I knew that I wanted to do something like that. And so it's like fun for me, but also has been, I don't know what to call it, like part of the vision I have, like with my life and my career. And just so happened to, I mean, I had been wanting to have a confession booth since I was, I even tried out to be a Much Music VJ, like back in the day.
Nice.
And I had to, I think I got to like the second round, and I had to be on camera and sell them like something that I wanted to do. And it was the confession booth. Like, and I have even before that, it must have been before I was like even in my 20s, I had this little book where I have all my ideas, and one was the confession booth. Like it's in there because I grew up, spent a couple of years living or going to school in a convent, and it was, that scared the shit out of me. Like the confession booth there, like, was super scary for me.
Yeah.
But somehow, I don't know, like it just made this connection in my 20s. I don't think I was actually thinking about the confession booth when I was like 5, 6, 7.
Yeah.
But yeah, somehow worked its way into my subconscious.
Well, I love that connection. And it's, if people could see you, the joy that emanates from you when you speak of it, like I really hear how just supporting people to normalize, and not just normalize but capitalize on a great gift of their bodies, their minds, like brings you just so much satisfaction and joy. It's apparent.
Aww.
I'm sure they'll hear it in your voice glowing.
I hope so. Or maybe it's just like it's my hand movements.
No, it's your beam, your radiant beam. Yeah. And I love that you have not just like education, but you have lived experience, and that it's really clear that you've accessed power in you. And now you've done a brave thing in bringing this work to podcast and, you know, made it available for folks that just may not ordinarily have been available this conversation. So thanks so much for doing that.
Oh, you're welcome. And for me, in my training, like I wanted to be whatever you want to call it, like a quote unquote real legit sex therapist. And so I had it all planned out a long time ago how I was going to do that because I wanted to get certified. And so for all of you out there, if you're ever looking, if you're ever struggling with some questions around sex, sexuality, or just, you know, having struggling in your relationship, I would highly recommend that you look for a certified sex therapist. And what that means simply is that to become a certified sex therapist, you have to have a minimum master's degree in social work, psychology, mm-hmm. medical doctor, occupational therapist, nurse, and there's a few more. And then you have to go through 3 years of training in order to get your certification. Mm-hmm. And then you go through like an exam to become certified. But then there's an expectation that twice a year you attend their meetings to make sure that you're up to date mm-hmm. with all the new research that is coming out, because there's tons of research now, which yeah. is so amazing. Money is being mm-hmm. put into sex, which is great, especially in Canada. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for a certified sex therapist, going on a website like BESCO, BESTCO.info, or if you're in the States or outside of Ontario, ASECT, AASECT, I would always just be very cautious if the person's not certified. Mm-hmm. Because I do get a lot of people that are coming into my practice that have seen somebody who's not a certified sex therapist and have had some really bad experiences with crossing boundaries, things like that. Whereas mm-hmm. our work is talk therapy. There mm-hmm. should not be any touching going on. Mm-hmm. Unless you're a surrogate partner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which actually you have a guest who
I do.
Yeah. So that's fabulous to actually hear the distinction. And thanks yes. so much for bringing that clarity. I had no yeah. idea. And I'm sure some of our audience may, and yeah. some may not. So that yeah. is, and man, what a subject to have your boundaries crossed when you're already coming in, maybe suffering from shame or breakdown in your intimacy or relationship to your body, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, man, ouch.
Or double just ouch. Some of the things that they will say, like, oh, well, you know, you're on your way to becoming gay if you're like interested in the same, like nobody has the right to tell you that. Mm-hmm. Your journey is your journey. If anyone puts on you what you are and wants to label you,
run.
Leave. Yeah.
Leave with haste.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for that. I really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. So that and a, you know, as I say, like you have so much lived experience. I would love to talk with you for like 3 more hours, 4 more hours.
This is fun.
It is really fun. So I'm hoping you have time for one more question.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one of the things we began talking about was communication, you know, hitting that. We talked about women's studies are getting more money, and I know that it actually is like centering around wellness and well-being. So mm-hmm. I had a thought a while ago, which was, it's interesting how, and you also brought this in terms of cultural reference, and that is, you know, the pleasing of your partner. And I wanted to get your thoughts, because this is kind of my like rough thoughts on this. Yeah. And that is actually the more we come back to our pleasure zone, mm-hmm. our comfort with our bodies, understanding what pleases us, mm-hmm. and we own that in our sexual relationships and yeah. bring that with our power. It's what I think about is like that sacred union.
Yeah.
And access to well-being.
Yes.
Because we hit all the other like physical, emotional, you know, like, but sex kind of like, where does it go? And yet it's such a huge part of our well-being.
It weaves its way into every aspect of your life. It's quite complicated psychologically and really intuitive if you actually break it down to like how to feel pleasure.
And what would you say in terms of like, what are your educated and lived experience thoughts on the new research on well-being and the impact that sex has on an individual's vitality, if you will?
I mean, I think it depends on the person, right? Like, I think if somebody wants to, who gets up to a point in their life where they're like, you know what, I'm retiring from sex. I'm good. All the power to you, right? Like, this is all about if it's causing you distress, that is when it needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you're not addressing a concern that's coming up sexually, it takes up way more space in your life than it should. Mm. Your sex life should be something that, you know, it's sort of there and like it's a part of who you are, but you're not, it's just an aspect of your life. I see people that it has caused them such terrible anxiety and depression that you need to be able to understand what's happening underneath to like free them up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it is a way of taking care of yourself. Like a lot of people have a struggle with giving themselves pleasure.
Yeah.
People who, for example, somebody who has an eating disorder, disordered eating, or body image type of negative body image. It is so important to be able to deconstruct what's getting in the way of being kind to themselves and feeling good.
Yeah.
And that is like impacts every area of their life.
Yeah.
But definitely with sex, because in order to feel pleasure, you have to allow yourself to be open to it. And if sex is something that is causing you joy and excitement, and I hope it does, joy and excitement and stress relief, connection, intimacy, how can that not be good for you? When it's not providing you those things, you're going to be in trouble, right? Like I have people that are referred to me that have experienced a lot of suicidal ideation because there's so much fear when it comes to sex that it's getting in the way of them even being able to get into a relationship because they know that part of that escalator and part of what they want. It's not always, not everybody wants to have sex, right? There are people out there that identify as being asexual. So I'm not talking about you here, that they want that. And they're denying themselves that connection that we all, like we need to feel connected to people, right? And so a lot of the work is trying to find ways to help them lean into some of the fear around what happens if you give yourself pleasure, what happens if you go on that date, but you don't want to have sex and you say, you know what, I'm not ready to have sex, but you can do that, right? To know that you have control, you're allowed to not have an agenda and like, it doesn't have to be a check box on your day or some people will connect it with, I don't know, it's always like, I'm too busy.
Yeah.
Too busy to do this.
Right? Yeah. Which sometimes I think translates to, I'm holding something on you. I'm mad at you.
Yeah.
Or either the royal you looking one finger pointing back at yourself or there's that disconnect.
The one piece of evidence that has been that has come out, I would say, over the last several years is when it comes to sex, pleasure is the measure.
Mm-hmm.
If you aren't having pleasurable sex, you're not going to want to have it.
Mm-hmm.
right? So when I work with people who, couples or people in relationships mm-hmm. who are in long-term relationships and they're not having sex, I will often in my individual sessions with them say, like, are you having the sex that you want to be having?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So pleasure is the measure, making sure that you're, in order to have fun in the bedroom, you need to be having fun outside of the bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. You can't just like yeah. sit there and not be doing anything during the day. You watch TV and then you think you're going to go into the bedroom and like have sex where you're hanging from chandeliers.
Mm-hmm.
No, why, how, like,
yeah.
where are you going to get that from?
Like a huge it's not like, leap.
Yeah. Yeah. You need yeah. to be able to like bridge
yeah.
yourself.
There was an outstanding book. Allison and I were trying to, my partner for the audience, mm-hmm. We're trying to remember the name of it that talks about 24-hour priming.
Oh, or, foreplay is everything that happens after the last orgasm.
Yes. Yeah. Totally. But I love yeah. what you said. There needs to be a bridge of some sort or, you know, some way for you to cross it together.
And everyone's different.
And everyone is different.
Everyone is different. If taking out the garbage, it adds to your list of increasing the possibility of being open to sex, not necessarily horny for it, but open to it. I think, and especially, you know, as we get into long-term relationships or as we start to age, sometimes our desire can change
mm-hmm.
and it's less, and people get really stressed out because they're like, but I'm not horny to have sex. Well, the goal here is it's possible that your desire has changed and that you went from being spontaneous desire, having spontaneous desire, which is kind of like a light switch,
yeah.
to more responsive desire, which means that there has to be things going on around you that make you more open to it. So maybe it is like getting everything off your list that you needed to get done. Maybe it's going to have a shower. Maybe it's going to the gym. I don't know. Maybe it's a reading erotica or something, but it's not that that then should be making you horny before you even start any kind of like touch with your partner. No, it's okay to be able to go in neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're open to having sex and it feels good, like you're, then your body will start to respond. You'll have a physiological response and then you'll start to get aroused. And then you mm-hmm. might meet your partner who might be more spontaneous. You meet them, you just meet them at a different stage mm-hmm. in the sexual cycle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Amazing. Thanks for, again, I just can't stress enough like how much gratitude I have for you and that you bring such ease to a topic that really causes a lot of stress for people.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for just normalizing and bringing it in such a way that it's easy to listen to. And it's just so much normalization. There's just so yeah. much
thank you.
For people. And I thanks for just debunking myth too.
Oh, right? I love debunking myths. Yes. So many myths out there. The other thing that I wanted to say was part of my goal for the podcast is also to be bringing in other people who mm-hmm. aren't white,
mm-hmm.
right? If we look at all the certified sex therapists out there, people who get themselves out there into the media talking about sex, I would say most of them are white. To become a certified sex therapist mm-hmm. is very privileged.
Mm-hmm.
And so my goal is, because I have worked with so many people who are part of the BIPOC community who are like friggin' blow my minds.
Mm-hmm.
And I want more people, like I want more people of color, more people with, you know, different abilities to get into this work because mm-hmm. I don't represent the face of the majority out there.
Mm.
I need people, there needs to be more voices, more diversity in this field
mm-hmm.
so that people can like feel validated and feel connected and like see a part of themselves in the person who's doing the educating or giving the support.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for identifying with that and being a champion for it and of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally align and resonate with everything that you've said.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you would, you know, that you're burning to share before we conclude our session today? I'm hoping you'll come back and visit us again and we can do a follow-up because this is amazing.
Honestly, I feel so content with what we've talked about today. It was so easy to talk with you. I think we have a really nice connection, and like, you really provided such a safe space for me to just like not be in my head, but be more in my body. And because oftentimes what I will do is I can feel when I go into my head, and like, then I'll start to lose my train of thought, but I didn't feel that today. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Thanks for the connection. Definitely a two-way street. I adore the work that you're doing. You've had such brilliant and incredible humans on that podcast. So I just really want to urge people to check it out. It's Get Some, and you're available on Podbean and Spotify and Apple and all the rest.
Where you like to listen to podcasts.
Where you like to listen. And we can follow you on Instagram. So that is another place to connect with you. And also to begin sending in, there'll be information on Instagram also about where they can send questions in so that they can have them answered. And
great.
Awesome.
And Tracy, I just also wanted to say that you do amazing work as well.
Aw.
Right? Like, you really have such an amazing ability to tap in to a way of thinking that really, it's almost like in some ways you let people out of their prison.
Oh man. Thank you so much. Fully landed in my heart.
Okay, good.
You're a delight. Thank you so much. I adore you, and best wishes for many, many more successful episodes of an incredibly brilliant and, I know, like, soulful project that is your podcast.
I adore you too.
I'm Tracy Burns, and you've been listening to Talk to Tea, entrepreneurs riffing on all things love and being. If you enjoyed this episode, please join us next time. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you like to hear podcasts. Until then, remember, let love lead, and always leave room for a little magic in your life.